4 days is not enough, that's for sure. But we have a phenomenal, phenomenal hour planned for you. And of course, you know the legacy of Star Wars and Del Rey goes back since the original novelization of the first film so many years ago. And it's just great to see that continuity continue. And so we're going to be talking about what's out there now and what is yet to come. And we've got a fabulous panel for you. So put your hands together first. Del Rey Editor-at-Large, Shelley Shapiro. And Lucasfilm Senior Editor, Jennifer Heddle. Author of so many great books, including Star Wars A New Dawn, John Jackson Miller. This guy knows the dark side maybe better than just about anybody else. James Lucino. And finally, the great Christy Golden. Well, what did you think of the trailer?
It was all right. I loved it. I want to see the movie.
I saw it on Leland Chee's cell phone, so I'd really like to see it large.
Right. Waiting in lines, right?
Yeah.
On the cell phone. Well, it's amazing. It holds up whether you're on a cell phone or you see it on the big screen. It's just phenomenal. You should check it out.
All right.
What did you think, Jim?
Loved it. Loved it. Especially the last few seconds when I get to see Han and Chewie.
Yeah. At home. I think we all felt like we were home at that moment.
Christy? I thought it was fantastic. It was just one thing after another that just made my heart lift with each new revelation.
Yeah, it was something. So let's talk about what's available now. Starting off with John, Star Wars A New Dawn. And it's truly a new dawn for Star Wars in so many ways. But in one profound way, Star Wars Rebels. And you had the privilege of introducing a lot of new characters to us.
Yeah, that was great. That was the first book that was released in conjunction with the Lucasfilm Story Group. So I got to see what they had planned for Rebels a good year in advance, and work with Dave Filoni and Simon Kinberg and Greg Wiseman and the other people with the production team of the TV show to come up with a book that showed some things that people would see on screen eventually. And then, of course, with the rest of the Lucasfilm team as well, we worked to make sure that everything connected properly, and we showed Kanan and Hera as they were when they met.
And what characters were you drawn to immediately?
Well, I think Kanan is a lot of fun, certainly. I had written the Kenobi novel, which was about a Jedi who... Well, yeah. Also available in paperback and ebook and audiobook from Del Rey. I had written this book about somebody who actually had a plan for the time when the Jedi were in hiding. And he knew what he was doing. He had a mission. Kanan was like, what, Order 66, everybody's dead.
Well, you're just a little kid.
Yeah, a little kid. So basically he decides, okay, well, I guess I'm not a Jedi. I might as well go get drunk. And that's our book.
And that's
the beginning, middle, and end. No. But yeah, it was a lot of fun and showing the beginnings of how, Kanan and Hera start to form this little sort of, it's not even a rebel cell yet. It's almost just more of a family of people who go out and blow things up. And that's what they do for fun.
You've gotten in the heads of so many Jedi in writing these books. What new did you learn, did you discover in writing Kanan's story?
What new did I discover writing Kanan? Well, again, you know, you start thinking about how many of the Jedi's practices are based on the fact that you've got the rules around and the peer pressure of the other Jedi that are out there. And, you know, Kanan has time to think about, well, you know, this whole Jedi dating thing, this is just dumb. he doesn't have anybody else out there to say no. So, you know, he's basically sort of making up his own rules as he's going along.
Yeah. And outside of Kanan, who is your favorite character to write in the book?
That book has a really interesting character, Rae Sloane, who is the captain of the Ultimatum, and she's just really smart. And the fun thing about that character is she is a believer. She's not evil. She just understands that the Republic was a mess in a lot of serious ways. And, you know, she, at least at this early stage of her career, is wanting to, you know, play by the rules and try and advance the Emperor's vision for the galaxy, which, you know, the whole notion of the Empire, it can only work if certain people beyond the Emperor believe in it. They can't all just be mindless slaves, otherwise they would tell them to go away. But yeah, she I think is representative of a new kind of person in the Empire, and so she was very fun to write.
Would you like to go back to the folks on the Ghost at some point, revisit them?
I think that would be a lot of fun. You know, in fact, if folks are interested in Rae Sloane, we have a certain thing out in Star Wars Insider magazine right now, which you can get at the booth. So, new short story.
And how was it working with Dave Filoni and his crew?
Well, it was great. We got a lot of notes back on everything. And, you know, he said, Kanan's a cowboy. And I said, okay, I need to figure out, what are cows in the Star Wars universe? How does that work? And then I realized it's an attitude. And you know, Kanan is very much, he has many reasons to want to have other people leave him alone you know, to have project a certain image. And so yeah, it definitely got a lot of help from those guys.
I think it's really important to mention that when John was writing this book, there was no animation available for Rebels, no voiceovers. So, you know, that was one reason that the Rebels team was so heavily involved, because it wasn't like John could work off of episodes to see how Kanan and Hera moved and talked. And, you know, so we had to make sure that those characters in the book would be true to the characters that you were going to see on the screen very soon. And I think that John just absolutely blew me away with how he managed to nail these characters that he hadn't even, you know, been able to see in motion. So I think it just, you know, he and Dave seemed to, when they first started talking about Kanan and who he is, they seemed to just get on the same page right away and really connect, and it was just a great process.
As a matter of fact, Vanessa Marshall told John in particular that she found the book really helpful in learning to, or figuring out how best to voice Hera for the show. Mm-hmm. That's how well he captured the character and the feel of the character, the sound of the character.
That's a great endorsement.
I was just going to say, doesn't get much better than that.
That's right.
Character study. All right, well, how about this guy? I would say it's about time that he get his own book. And, yeah? And, Jim, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, Tarkin was the forgotten villain. He didn't even get his own action figure for the longest time. And that is, you know, that was the gold standard. That was how you knew whether you had made it. And I guess Kenner didn't think we wanted to buy an old gray-haired man. But I wanted him in the worst way. So, how has his star as a character sort of risen over the years, and how did you capture that in the book?
Well, I started with getting the privilege of writing about the guy who was holding Vader's leash, that foul stench aboard the Death Star. Once we had sort of established his background on a colonial world, I was able to create a background for him that was a little bit different than the other Darksiders. And I sort of see him as a Darksider without the dark side of the Force, but faithful to the Empire and willing to do whatever it takes to have the Empire succeed.
Would you call Tarkin a true believer in that agenda? Or, is he out, or would you say he's more out for himself?
Yeah, beyond that, beyond true believer. Just willing to do anything. The Empire had to succeed. We couldn't let chaos reign in the galaxy.
And we don't see on screen that much interaction between Vader and Tarkin. We don't have the benefit of seeing how they would have been together had there been, you know, more films with them. How did you go about putting those conversations together?
Oh, pure imagination. In the same way I was able to put Tarkin together with Dooku and put Tarkin together with the Emperor. I don't know where this stuff comes from. You sit down and you start hearing voices in your head and you either take medication or you get it down on the page.
I think it's really interesting that you say he's a dark sider without the dark side of the Force. You know, there are, you know, great villains don't see themselves as villains.
Right.
So
heroes of their own story, as it were.
Exactly. So Tarkin being prime evil, did you have to find more to him than that?
I think once I was able to show the events that shaped him, it was pretty organic about the way his character developed and why he was a tool of the Empire.
Awesome. Heir to the Jedi. Now, Kevin is not here. Yep. I love this cover. This is just, I just love this idea of Luke at this point. Shelley, talk about where we find Luke Skywalker here.
This is Luke right off his experience destroying the Death Star, the first one. And this is a perfect point to study Luke because, and from his point of view, which was very exciting to be able to do, because here he is, a hero, and it was just like 2 seconds ago that he was whining about wanting to join the Space Academy, and he's, you know, now he's a hero, and he's not sure what happened. He's just learned that he has, you know, the ability to use the Force, but the only person he knows of who could teach him is dead, and he's lost almost everything. He's got new friends, new family, kind of, but he's lost his aunt and uncle, he lost Obi-Wan, and he's kind of floundering. He's absolutely with the Rebel Alliance, but he has to figure his way through to figure out who he is. You know, is he the arrogant hero? Is he the humble Padawan or wannabe Padawan? Is he, you know, what? Who is he? And it's a great, great place to explore him, and like I said, a perfect place to get into his head from the first person.
And how do you go about matching these projects, very daunting projects, especially in this time where there's so much free reign in the storytelling? How do you go about matching them with the right author?
Well, in this case, you know, we're always on the lookout for authors who might want to write Star Wars. And in this case, I'm a fan of Kevin's Iron Druid books. And I've noticed that he makes Star Wars references in his books all the time. So clearly he's an enormous fan. So we decided, I thought in some ways his character Atticus, while on one hand is thousands of years old, even though he seems 21, had some similarities with Luke's character. And it just seemed like a good one to approach him for, to see if he wanted to write a Star Wars book and if he wanted to write a Luke book.
And so, though it is in Luke's perspective, tell us about what the other characters are thinking and doing at this point.
We have to read the book.
All right.
Now, mostly it's Luke doing his thing. It's really Luke's story.
All right. Now, that was what's available now. So let's turn the page here and let's talk about some of the things that are coming up, starting with Lords of the Sith. And I think when we saw this cover, we all just, I mean, it was just such a dream come true to see these two in battle together. And something we know about Palpatine is, with very, very few exceptions, he never gets his hands dirty. But it looks here, based on the cover, he's about to get his hands dirty.
Yeah, I mean, this the super high concept for this novel was, let's have a book where Vader and the Emperor just kick some ass, you know? I mean, it was, you know, like you just said, we just thought it would be really fun to see the two of them in action together. And, you know, they're put into a situation where the Emperor, he kind of has to get his hands a little dirty. They don't really have, much other resources to rely on. I should also mention that one of the other main characters in this book, it's basically takes place above and on Ryloth, and it deals a lot with the freedom movement on that planet, which is being led by Champs and Dula, who is Hera's father from Rebels. So it's he's a great character as well, and so it's really great to see these opposing views, and also to get to see how those characters see Vader. Basically he scares the crap out of them, as he should. And so it's really interesting to see how they try to, it's that thing where they know they have to take him out, but they're really scared to do it because he's so powerful.
Well, they don't even really know all his powers that
right.
we know from the movies, because
exactly.
they haven't seen the movies. So all they know is that this guy is really scary and he does scary things, but they don't have a clue about the Force really, and they only have a sense of a fraction of what he can do, and they're really scared.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this so clearly, it brings it all to life in a really nice, scary Vader way.
Now, no spoilers, of course, but might we be better informed as to how Hera's views of the Empire and what motivates her and her struggles that they might be informed by what we see in this book?
Yes. I think you'll...
a long yes.
A long answer is yes. I think you will get a better sense of why Hera approaches the rebellion the way she does, based on how her father approached things. It is going to be an interesting relationship to see there.
And do we see Hera in the book?
You have to read the book. I'm not going to tell you everything.
You got to do some work yourself, you know.
So, unproduced episodes of The Clone Wars. This was something that I think the fans have been asking for a long, maybe demanding in some ways, demanding to see because of all the great groundwork that was laid in the series. How difficult was it to decide to grab these stories and give them new life into book form?
Oh, it wasn't difficult at all. In fact, the funny thing is that the way this came about is we were talking to Dave and the story group about something else, something completely different. And anyone who's ever listened to Dave speak knows that he, you know, can occasionally go off on tangents. And he went off on this tangent about this Ventress and Quinlan Vos arc. That was written but never, you know, aired. And we kind of said, whoa, wait a minute. You know, this other idea we're talking about is good, but tell us more about this. You know, this could be an amazing book. So it was a really easy decision. We were so excited to be able to do it. We're so happy that Dave, you know, gave us the okay to do it. We've been wanting to do something with Ventress, especially for a while, so this was the perfect opportunity.
Now, Christy, you had sort of the opposite scenario as John, where John was sort of prepping something that we were about to see, whereas you're taking something that we were going to see, maybe, but didn't get to see, and fill that out.
Well, we did get to see quite a bit of Asajj Ventress in the Clone Wars, and so there was all that information for me to draw on, and those, of course, were fully realized episodes. I also was able to get all 8 of the scripts and 4 animatics, so I was able to see how the characters could interact. And those of you who were at the panel where they showed some of these scenes, you can see how even when they're not completed, there's still so much there. So that was very, very helpful. And my job was to familiarize myself with that world and these two characters to the point where, and James has nailed it, you hear the voices in your head, and they start speaking. And my hope is that when people read this, they will not be able to tell which came from the script and which came from me. And if that's the case, then I will have done my job right.
Excellent. Excellent.
How about that cover, right? Awesome.
We are on a journey indeed, and the journey to the Force Awakens. And this is really a cross-platform, cross-publisher effort, which, as Star Wars fans, we've seen similar things like this. How is Journey to Star Wars The Force Awakens, how is that different from, say, the campaign for Shadows of the Empire, for example, where it was cross-platform?
Well, I think the big difference is that now we have the Lucasfilm Story Group, what's great for someone like me, who's dealing with different publishers on different projects, is that, you know, we have this group of amazing people that we can go to, who are really taking this high-level macro view of everything that's going on, and can suggest ways that these different projects on different platforms from, you know, different publishers can tie together. I wasn't around for Shadows of the Empire. I mean, here, I was alive, but I wasn't at Lucasfilm then.
Was it that long ago?
But yeah, this has been a really fun venture to work on. It's the journey to the Force Awakens program is being published across age levels, prose, comics, and again, the luxury of the story group is that we can have all of these different talented authors telling the stories that they want to tell, and then we kind of have the story group who's reading everything saying, oh, here are the ways that we can, you know, start to tie these threads together.
And do you know at this point how many pieces of literature will be telling this story at this point, or is that still evolving?
Well, I believe the official number is 20, but quite a few of those are like sticker and coloring books, so there's not a lot of story in those. But there's at least 6 or 7 important pieces of fiction that will tie together a little bit, and they'll all have little clues and Easter eggs that are related to The Force Awakens.
And they will all have the banner.
They'll all have the banner, yes.
Okay. So, and these will all be released, I'm assuming, then, by the end of the year?
All be released on September 4th this year.
Everything released at once?
That's the idea.
Wow.
Yes.
What are you doing on September
4th? Yeah.
Exactly.
So, with a film as secret as, clearly, The Force Awakens, how do you spread out all this information that is required and still sort of keep some of the best... Shelley's laughing. How do you do it? How do you keep it all secret but yet have them, you know, working on these projects? Is it that they all know, like, little pieces but nobody knows everything? Is that how it works?
Kind of. It's just really handled very, very carefully.
Yeah. It's very neat to know. You know, like I said, the real... Force Awakens components are, you know, they're oblique at this point. There are a lot of things that you're not even going to realize what the connection is until you actually see the movie. Say, oh, that's what, you know.
I see. So the movie is the payoff in some ways as opposed to...
Yeah.
Right.
But you don't, and again, you know, because of that, because everything's coming out in September, you don't need to know anything about The Force Awakens. I mean, these are, you know, complete stories that stand on their own. You know, this is more just... You know, this was what we could do in September 2015 to give fans, you know, little tastes of what they might be able to see in December while still just telling, you know, great stories.
Well, the authors are all being held on a secret site until December. They'll be released when the movie is.
Well, we have to have something to pass the time, because, boy, that time September rolls around, it's just going to be, like, the worst Christmas Eve, the longest Christmas Eve ever. Now, we have two books that are going to be packaged together.
Yep. Yes, we're bringing these two stories together, these two novels together into one bind-up, and we're calling it Rise of the Empire. What we're trying to sort of do is show the thread that ties things from the start of the empire through as it became powerful and, you know, right before the, you know, the Rebel Alliance destroys it, or hopefully destroys it, or at least until they destroyed two Death Stars. We are going to have three brand new short stories to go along to kind of connect these, or fill some spaces between them. And one of those will actually nod toward Aftermath, so that we can feel that this is all one galaxy and one history, and that the journey that we all started when the Emperor took over and, you know, destroyed freedom, till that moment of initial, like, total feeling of victory at the end of Return of the Jedi, that there's one long tied together journey of the galaxy in general. So that's the goal for this bind-up, to give that feeling of it all being together. And also, we haven't had a chance before this much to explore the dark times, the times between the earlier movies. And this also gave us that opportunity to start doing a little bit more. This bringing these together just shows that we're solidly in that era now, and that we can explore it, and adding the stories is just making it, giving it some more meat and making it more feel like it's all one tale.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. If you look at the covers, and, you know, one is, if you're following Rebels, you realize that that's an animated series, where the other is a little bit more movie realistic, and so combining them, I think, is a fantastic idea to get that sense of continuity.
Well, it also reminds people that it doesn't matter. It's animated, it's on TV, it's movies, it's real people, but it's all acting, it's all stories, it's all real media.
Yeah. All one universe, as Leland Chee said in the last panel. Battlefront. Cover not final, not out until November 3rd. Probably not a whole lot you can say about this, but...
That's the subtitle, Cover Not Final.
It's a good one. It's a page turn on that one. Well, tell us what you can about that, if you would, please.
Well, speaking of it all one media, I mean, you know, sure. It's all... That's kind of media is plural. But anyway, this is connected to the Battlefront game that now everybody knows about. And it's not a novelization. That's not that kind of game, and we didn't want to try to do that. But it should give you, if you are a gamer, it should give you a taste of being in the game as a gamer. And if you're not a gamer, it should just give you a great taste of what it would be like to be a soldier on the front lines in the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah, so, I mean, sorry, I was just going to say, you know, this, again, is another case where, you know, having the story group and really focusing on one big story, one continuity really comes in handy. You know, they're able to facilitate between publishing and, you know, EA. Again, you know, we know what Battlefront, the video game, is. It's a kick-ass action game. And so, you know, what we're able to do is just kind of focus in on a story about the Twilight Company, you know, a particular platoon of people. But it'll basically, you know, you'll get the sense when you're playing the game of what it's like, but this will put you more in the heads of, you know, particular rebels fighting that fight.
Is it more of sort of the everyday soldier?
Exactly.
As opposed to the heroes, which I'm a big fan of that. So at this point...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we have this awesome sampler, which you can pick up at our booth, that has sample chapters from all of these, except for Aftermath.
Yeah, and we should mention that the author, Alex Freed, he's worked in the video game arena before. I mean, not particularly on Battlefront, but... and he's a writer. He's written some short stories for us in the past, and Insider. This is his first novel for us, and...
It's really good.
He's done an amazing job. He's a really great writer. Yeah, I think you guys are going to love it.
So at this point, we're going to open it up for questions. So if you have a question, get the hands up, keep them up. I know arms get a little tired. My buddy Pete down here is going to find you, and I'll ask you what your question is. So do we have one?
Yeah, we're going to start right here in the corner. Sir, do you have a question?
I understand you're looking for someone to write the novelization of The Force Awakens. I'd be happy to do that.
Sure, there are a lot of people here that would like to do that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody hold up your hand if you'd like to write the novelization. So why, I can't even see you from here, I can't see anybody actually. So why, what makes you qualified? Have you written Star Wars before, like when I was a kid or something?
Well, I did some a long time ago, and in a city far, far away, and I think I know the characters pretty well by now, and it would be nice to, you know, keep working with them.
We have to make a decision.
We have been looking for someone. I mean, it's been taking a while, and we're getting down to the wire.
Give him a chance.
Can you write fast?
I can write really fast if it's a good story.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we appreciate your...
Okay.
That sounds good.
You got it.
Good job. This is unbelievable. Come into the light, sir. Step into the light. Alan Dean Foster, ladies and gentlemen. You, of course, wrote the original novelization of the first Star Wars film. Wow. Talk about legacy.
Exactly.
So that's how your decisions are made around there?
Yeah.
Very spur of the moment. I love the spontaneity.
It helps if someone gives us a drink, but, you know.
Wow. Alan, this has got to be, this is quite a homecoming for you, no?
It's nice to be back.
It's very nice to have you back.
Yes.
I'm working on the book right now, and it's just like no time has passed at all. There's a big logo. It says the end.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously super excited that Alan was willing and able to do this for us. You know, as someone who grew up reading and rereading and rereading the novelization and Splinter of the Mind's Eye, I'm absolutely thrilled that Alan can do this for us.
It's really been a lot of fun. It's really been a lot of fun so far. Somebody asked me a couple of days ago, I said, who knew, and said, if you had to describe the picture in one word, what would you say? And I would say, fun.
Mm. Not a bad word for Star Wars. Alan, I know, you know, it's difficult for you to answer questions about this, but I'm going to ask anyway. But how has the process changed for you, just in terms of, you know, what you had as resources to draw on from when you wrote the original novelization to now?
Well, when I wrote the original novelization, I got a copy of the script and a couple of Ralph McQuarrie's pre-production drawings. And then I went down to Industrial Light and Magic, which was on a street called Kester Avenue in Van Nuys, and in a rented warehouse. And George Lucas showed me around, said, here's the Death Star, this little beach ball-sized thing. And I got to watch a handful of people really putting together things like the trench run at the end of the film. The sets, the plastic sets were so big that they had to put them out in the parking lot, so they're shooting Star Wars out in the parking lot. Killing a little time waiting for George, and this guy says, come here, I want to show you something neat. Look at this camera I've invented. It's John Dykstra showing me the first computer-controlled camera. And they're shooting green screen shots of the Millennium Falcon, and I'm looking around, and I'd never seen so many cannibalized World War II battleship and airplane model kits in my life. So there weren't a lot of people, and there wasn't a lot of stuff. But then I got to see some dailies, from the film, and it was TIE fighters shooting at the Millennium Falcon and vice versa with no sound and no music and no sound effects. And I'm looking at this as somebody who grew up with science fiction, and I'm thinking, this can't be the whole movie. This is the best part of the movie. I can't do this through the whole movie. And I realized when I got the script, if they can put this on screen, this is going to be something really special. And lo and behold.
So that moment when you realized that it was going to be special, what was it exactly? Was it the promise of the effects? Was it the characters? Was it the whole notion of the Force? What was it that really spoke to you at first?
I saw it for the first time, the whole film, at a cast and crew screening where they rented a theater on Hollywood Boulevard for people who had worked on the film. And at that point, I thought, well, they did it. They put everything on screen that they were going to try to put on screen. But the moment I realized what you just asked, I went to the very first showing of the film at Grauman's Chinese Theater. It was a morning showing, and I sat in the back of the theater and watched the audience. And the film started, and as soon as the Star Destroyer comes up on screen, and everybody starts cheering. And I had never seen people cheer for anything in a movie. I mean, stand up and start yelling and cheering in a movie theater, and thought, okay, this is really something special.
Fantastic. Well, Alan, on behalf of Star Wars fans everywhere, welcome back. Thank you.
I guess we made a mistake giving them both the same subtitle. We'll have to change one of them.
Well, I think we can do some, we do have time for some real questions from the audience. Please don't be asking if you can write any more novelizations. I think this was a one-time thing. But so get your hands up, and Pete, we have our first one.
What's your name and where are you from?
Kyle from Houston.
Kyle, what's your question?
I actually have a question for Shelley. So when you have a big multi-book series like you had with Use Hot Long series that involves so many different authors, do you conceptualize it together as just you and people at Lucasfilm, or do you get all the authors together and be like, okay, this is the idea that we have, this is, and you just kind of kick ideas off each other?
Well, each one was a slightly different situation. With the New Jedi Order, we were going to have a trillion authors, so we started it off with the initial authors and Lucasfilm, and we all discussed it, conceptualized it, got things approved, got things disapproved, you know, figured things out, and then it started growing on its own. And with the later ones that were just 9 books each, that with 3 authors each, one of which I have sitting right here, we did bring the authors in, and we did have everybody brainstorm and plan with Lucasfilm, and I mean, we didn't have a story group back then, but it was some of the same people, Pablo and Leland, and people from Lucasfilm and the authors and some people from Del Rey, and we just talked and brainstormed and thought about it, and then the authors did their part, and we did our part, and that's how it happened.
Now, I mentioned this Jet, in the last panel, but we were talking about the timeline and how far out that you're planned with. Obviously, The Force Awakens coming up, and we have release dates of some of the subsequent films. How far out do you have to plan when you're dealing with, you know, books of this size and complexity and all of that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, there really is a long-term plan in place for the entertainment, and Story Group is very far-seeing in that way. We, meaning publishing, we know some of that. We're kind of on a need-to-know basis as well, so so we definitely work ahead, not quite as far as they do, but it definitely comes into play. We know, you know, what kind of movies are coming out, kind of TV shows are coming out, games, etc. And so we do have to plan ahead because we need to. I mean, you know, publishing, just to get into like the boring nuts and bolts. You know, you have a schedule and you have to schedule a certain amount of books per year and. You know, when you find out that, oh, we're going to have 2 Star Wars movies coming out within 6 months of each other, you suddenly have to play with the schedule a little bit. So it's definitely always something we're keeping in mind, you know, also just in terms of the kinds of stories we want to tell, when in the year there might be, you know, a little bit of a lull entertainment-wise where, you know, that might be a good place that we can introduce something different. For the readers, it takes place, you know, in a different, you know, area or time period. So we're definitely looking at it on a global scale a few years in the future.
A few years. Okay. We have another question out there, Pete.
Yeah, I'm out here with Justin from Las Vegas, and he has a very interesting continuity question.
Leon's not here.
I was curious how the new books and the new storyline is going to kind of interact with Legacy of the Force and Fate of the Jedi.
They're not. Remember, those took place many years after Return of the Jedi, and that the movies and everything are recreating that history. So history has now taken a different path, and it can't really interact. That would be like alternate worlds crossing, which Alan's written about in non-Star Star Wars books, and you can read those, and they're very confusing and a lot of fun. But it's not something that we can do with this.
Shelley, is it hard to manage the pipeline? You have books that are obviously being written, you have books that are being published and just hitting the market, you have PR going on and you're planning out. Is it hard to keep it all straight?
Sometimes.
All the time?
We do our best.
Another question out there, Pete.
I'm here with Jason, and he's got his next question.
So I was wondering, how many copies of Dark Disciple do I have to buy to convince Del Rey to give us Sword of the Jedi?
$10 million? I don't know. I was going to say $500 million.
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. We loved, you know, we worked really hard on our idea for Sword of the Jedi.
I'm a Jaina fan.
We love Jaina. I'm a big Jaina fan. I think it was at the Canon panel yesterday. Everything's blurring together in my head now. Talking about, stories or characters, if we'll ever be able to continue those. Nothing's impossible. We know how much you guys love certain characters. We love them too. So it's kind of, it's always in the back of our heads, you know?
Right now, there's a lot of new stuff, and we're focusing on new stuff while it's new, because that's the nature kind of life and of things moving forward. And, I mean, in a general life sense, not meaning going from now to then, but we can't publish 12 books a year, because that would strain everybody's pocketbooks, and people can't read that fast, most people.
And kill us.
And I can't do that much work. Yes, we will die. Or Jen and I will kill ourselves. But
Or each other.
never say never, but for the time being, join us on this new journey, because it's really, really fun. You know, don't assume that the past is completely dead, but for right now, just do what we're doing and throw yourself into the new opportunities, and because it's really great. The new books are so good. The new stories we're telling are so good. So just come with us.
Although I will say, if you want to buy a whole bunch of copies of Dark Disciple, nobody up here is going to mind.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. That might happen.
Another question? Yeah, I've got David from Whittier, and he has a question for Alan.
Hello, Mr. Foster. Great to talk to you. Love all your stuff, your original works, your novelizations. My question was, whether you're writing about Star Wars, Star Trek, Alien, whatever world you're writing, you capture the voices of the characters, the world, so perfectly. How do you do that? You're morphing from each world to the next, and you nail it every time.
Thank you. When I'm writing a novelization, when I'm writing in somebody else's universe, as well as my own, I'm a combination of two people. I'm an experienced writer, and I'm the 14-year-old kid sitting in the back of the movie theater with his friends criticizing loudly the lousy special effects. You put those two together, and you get what I hope is a real reflection of the film that you're seeing.
Wanted to come closer to the front where I could sit for a second and get two questions in a row where I didn't have to run. So we'll start with this gentleman here.
I'm Jay from Baltimore. And with the legacy books versus the canon books now, I know I get in a lot of discussions with my friends who know that I read the novelizations, and they say, well, why should I focus on Legends. Why should I focus on that and not on the new stuff? And I say, well, there's still good stories out there. Is there any chance that, I know that the, after Return of the Jedi stuff might conflict with a new movie or movies in some way, but is there any chance for other books, for example, Mr. Luceno's Darth Plagueis book, to be promoted to a more canon environment?
Right to your local congressman.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's really the purview of the story group, and it would kind of... They don't really make arbitrary decisions. You know, everything sort of happens organically. You know, if you read Tarkin, you may have noticed there were some nods and references to Jim's previous book in there. So we're kind of handling things on case by case. So I can't tell you that it will be, but I can't tell you that it won't be.
But we could pretty much guess, unless they change their minds, which is always possible, that if you read it in one of the canon novels, whatever part of that book was referred to, that is canon now.
Right, but it doesn't mean the
whole
book
doesn't mean the whole
was.
Book is canon.
And, you know, the thing about Darth Plagueis is, we, you know, the character is canon, and he's mentioned in Revenge of the Sith. So, you know, is Jim's book the way that played out? Maybe. Maybe not.
All right, who's next?
Next we have Priya from Washington, D.C.
Hi, I was wondering if you can tell us whether or not the Force Awakens novelization will come out before or after the film, so I know whether or not I have to go into a bunker in hiding. Oh, spoilers.
Okay, the novel is actually not that easy a question, but it's short, a short answer. The novelization will come out the same day as the movie in as an e-book. Sorry, guys, as an e-book. The hardcover will follow at an as-yet-undecided date in January.
Yes. So it won't be long. And it's going to have some cool stuff in it that maybe you didn't see on screen, so it'll totally be worth reading.
Jennifer from Sacramento is next up.
Yeah, I was wondering, with the Shattered Empire comic and Aftermath both being after Return of the Jedi, does one take place before the other? Are they concurrent? Are they different characters?
The honest answer is I'm not entirely sure yet, just because the Shattered Empire outline hasn't been totally hammered out yet, for the simple reason that comics work on a shorter lead time than novels. But the plan is definitely to have them feel like they're taking place around the same time, you know, the same environment, the same state of the galaxy. And we're going to do what we can to, you know, tie them together a bit.
I'm here in the middle of the room now with Tony from L.A.
How are you doing?
Hi.
I just wanted to know, is it going to be any compilation of the short stories ever published?
Yeah.
Maybe. There's a lot. We have so many books and so many stories to tell. It's good. One thing at a time, and it's not impossible.
Yeah, it's definitely not off the table for sure. It's something that's come up before.
And people love the physical copies of the books. I mean, we did all those Lost Tribe of the Sith stories, and we had over a million downloads of those for free, and then we put it out as a book, and it's on the ninth printing. I mean, so anything's possible.
Are you saying we should do it then?
I think it's a great idea. I read 7 or 8 of them.
All right, who's next? Jesse from Florida is next up.
Hey, so I was wondering, with the upcoming novels, et cetera, planning kind of years into the future, you've got that huge base of the legends, canon, locations, characters, events, whatever. Will some of the future novels, are they going to be borrowing things like planets or locations from that, or is everything getting created brand spanking new?
I mean, I think some of them already have.
They do now. They do now.
Yeah.
It's the same galaxy.
Yeah.
The map is, well, I don't want to say definitively, but the novels that have come out have used the same planets and the same species.
Yeah, the same atlas. Same. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to reinvent the wheel when some of this stuff... If our version of it is identical to the way that the previous version was, I would say there's probably no reason to create something completely new.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something very much handled on a case-by-case basis. And it may depend on whether, you know, again, story group may know that a particular planet is going to show up again in 5 years and something, so, you know, that we may have to stay away from that, but... you know, generally the way it's worked is that if an author wants to use, you know, some element that was created in Legends, and there's no reason not to let them do it, then absolutely. I mean, that's still kind of what we fall back on. I mean, that's the tapestry that we're working with, so yeah.
Who's next?
We've got Steve from Minneapolis. Steve, what's your question?
So we have all of these comics coming out in the new novels, and we have one continuity across all media. Are we going to start to see obvious references between those so that we know where the comics and novels relate to each other? Are they going to reference each other?
Where it's organic, it will, we hope. It is all one story and one galaxy.
Yeah.
I need Jen for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we'd like to do. I feel like you probably will see references, you know, in the fairly near future. You know, part of that is the Marvel stuff just started in January. So, but both Marvel and Del Rey are very interested in making sure that, you know, everything feels like one universe. So, you know, maybe not today, but you'll definitely, you know, see references pop up for sure.
And only where it makes sense. I mean,
we don't need to shoehorn it in.
Jen, how is it decided what becomes a story that you'll read in a comic book versus a novel versus maybe even an episode of Rebels? And do you know of examples where it has shifted, where something was intended for one medium and then it moved to another?
Kenobi was a graphic novel. Huh? It was a graphic novel proposal, went through 3 drafts, and I realized the thing was too darn long. And I put it on the shelf for 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, another example I would use is the Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir comic that we did. You know, again, that was based on Clone Wars episodes that, you know, weren't really going to see the light of day. And we definitely, you know, we had the discussion in-house, would this be better served as a novel or a comic book series? And we just felt that, especially with a character like Maul, who's so visual and so physical, that a comic book was the best way to go. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, something that we consider.
Dark Disciple is another obvious example, and I think that was selected for the novel treatment as opposed to perhaps some other threads from the Clone Wars because it was so character rich, and
exactly.
It had a novel gave you the chance to get inside a character's mind,
right.
And so it seemed pretty well suited for that mania.
Over here in the outer rim, we have Danny from Utah.
So I'm probably more the exception than the rule here. I've actually never read a Star Wars novel.
Get out.
Thank you, Danny.
So my question is, where do you recommend starting? It sounds like obviously within the canon, but at the beginning of, the very beginning, somewhere in the middle.
I think you can pick with what interests you the most. Every single one of the books, if you're looking for a novel, every single one of these books right now is designed to stand all by itself. We really want to, there's a lot of new fans coming in who haven't read the books. I know everybody's shocked, but some of them didn't know how to read when the books were published, and now they're grown up and they can read them. And we're trying to reach out. We're trying to make them accessible to people because we did hear a lot of people, you know, I don't know where to start. There's so many books. I'm overwhelmed. So I would say look at one of the new books and pick an era, era is kind of too big a word, but that interests you. You know, are you interested? Do you like the Clone Wars? Do you want an Asajj Ventress?
Yes.
Quinlan Vos story, then read Dark to start with Dark Disciple. Do you love Rebels and you want to get a feel of Rebels? Then read A New Dawn. Do you love Luke Skywalker? Read Heir to the Jedi. You know, just pick any one of them. None of them are a beginning. Each one is a beginning, and each one is an opening into the greater galaxy. And you can start with any of them. So just pick the one that looks interesting to you the most, and then read the others after.
Yeah. At the same time, we have, with the new books coming out, we have put together a timeline of the books, the new canon books
chronology
that have come out, and where they fall in relation to each other, and where they fall in relation to the movies and Rebels. So if you're interested in approaching it from a chronological perspective, you can use that to guide you.
But the books don't follow one from the next. It's not like a series that way, so you don't have to pick a first one
Or you could just like ask the question on Twitter and you'll get like 500 different responses. That's right.
And to be clear, that the much like in the previous, in the Legends, year one is the Battle of Yavin, correct? Or year zero?
Yeah, I believe we're still using that designation. Yeah.
The benchmark. Okay. I think we have time for one more, so make it good.
All right, that's a lot of pressure. Name and where you're from.
I'm Michelle from Virginia, and this one is for either John or Shelley. The Kanan that we see in A New Dawn is very different than the Kanan that we see in Rebels. Is there anything kicking around maybe to fill in that time in between to see how he developed?
Maybe.
Always in motion, the future is.
I don't think he's that different. I think that he's just a younger version, and I think that if there's a story that wants to be told, it'll be told.
Yeah, I mean, Kanan is pretty much in witness protection when we meet him in A New Dawn, and he's getting out of his shell more by the time you get to Rebels.
Yeah, but we really like the character of Kanan. He's such a rich character, and you know, you're definitely going to see more exploration of him, you know, either in the novels or the comics or both.
All right. How about a hand for this amazing panel? And a little special extra love for Mr. Alan Dean Foster. Thank you to all the folks at Delray. Thank you to you for all your wonderful questions. Have a great rest of your day at Star Wars Celebration. Yeah.